best kind of insurance that you can have, both during physical life and afterward. It may outrage your intellect, and the evidence of your physical senses may shout that it is untrue, yet a belief in good without a belief in evil is actually highly realistic, since in physical life it will keep your body healthier, keep you psychologically free of many fears and mental difficulties, and bring you a feeling of ease and spontaneity in which the development of your abilities can be better fulfilled. After death, it will release you from the belief in demons and hell and enforced punishment. You will be better prepared to understand the nature of reality as it is. I understand that the concept does indeed offend your intellect, and that your senses seem to deny it. Yet you should already realize that your senses tell you many things which are not true, and I tell you that your physical senses perceive a reality that is a result of your beliefs. Believing in evils, you will, of course, perceive them. Your world has not tried the experiment as yet, which would release you. Christianity was but a distortion of this main truth, that is, organized Christianity as you know it. I am not simply speaking here of the original precepts. They were hardly given a chance, and we will discuss some of this later in the book. The experiment that would transform your world would operate upon the basic idea that you create your own reality according to the nature of your beliefs, and that all existence was blessed and that evil did not exist in it. If these ideas were followed individually and collectively, then the evidence of your physical senses would find no contradiction. They would perceive the world and existence as good. This is the experiment that has not been tried, and these are the truths that you must learn after physical death. Some, after death, understanding these truths, choose to return to physical existence and explain them. Through the centuries, this has been the way in the system of probabilities that originates within physical reality. This is also the case. There are systems of probability not connected with your own system at all, much more advanced than any you presently imagine, and in these, the truths of which I have been speaking are well known. In them, individuals creatively and purposely create realities, knowing how to do so, and giving full rein to the creative abilities of consciousness.
1059.
I mention this here simply to point out that there are many other after-death conditions not connected with your system. When you have learned to your capacity in this in-between period, you are ready to progress. The in-between period itself, however, has many dimensions of activity and divisions of experience. As you can see, to put it as simply as possible, everyone does not know everyone else. Instead of countries or physical divisions, you have psychological states. To an individual in one, another might seem quite foreign. In many communications with those in these transitional states, messages through mediums can appear as highly contradictory. The experience of the dead is not the same. The conditions and situations vary. An individual explaining his reality can only explain what he knows. Again, such material often offends the intellect that demands simple, neat answers and descriptions that tally. Most individuals from these stages who communicate with living relatives have not reached the time of choosing as yet and have not completed their training.
1106.
They may still be perceiving reality in terms of their old beliefs. Almost all communications come from this level, particularly when there is a bond of relationship in an immediately previous life. Even at this level, however, such messages serve a purpose. The communicators can inform living relatives that existence continues and they can do it in terms that the living can understand. They can relate to the living since often their beliefs are still the same. In fortunate circumstances, they can communicate their knowledge as they learn. Gradually, however, Their own interests change. They take up relationships in their new existence. At the time of choosing, therefore, the personality is already preparing itself to leave for another existence. In your terms of time, this in-between period can last for centuries. It can last only a few years. Again, however, there are exceptions. There are cases in which a personality goes very quickly into another physical life, in perhaps a matter of hours. This is usually unfortunate, and is caused by an obsessive desire to return to physical life. Such a quick return, however, can also be taken by a personality who is charged with a great purpose, who disregards or discards an old physical body, and is reborn almost immediately into a new one in order to finish an important and necessary project already begun. Now, we will end our session unless you have questions.
I guess not.
A hearty good evening to you both.
Good night, Seth.
You should have been here for last night's ESP class session. You would have enjoyed it.
I'm going to read it. I had been typing a session in my studio while class met in our living room. The session had been recorded by a class member, as usual, and we'll have a transcript of it in a few days.
And you would not have had to take notes.
Pause.
Now, I am here with you strongly this evening, and if you give yourself the suggestions, then I will help you out of your body. Tell yourself to remember.
Okay. I'd like to project.
Until later, then.
Good night, Seth, and thank you. 11:18 p.m. Jane's trance had been quite deep, and it took her longer than usual to come out of it. In the latter part of the session, I had been able to easily sense the immediacy of Seth's presence. Jane told me that, at the tail end of the session, she had picked up this idea from Seth. I could tape a session, and while it was in progress, I would be free to do a series of sketches of her speaking for Seth. From the sketches, I could then do an oil of her. Jane was sure the idea came from Seth. She'd never thought of it before, and neither had I, for that matter. Upon retiring, I attempted the suggestions about projection as mentioned by Seth, but I had nothing to report in the morning. If I wait until I go to bed, I'll usually have difficulty giving myself suggestions. I fall asleep too quickly. Jane approaches the sleep state in a more leisurely manner. Session 547, August 24th, 1970, 9:10 p.m., Monday.
Now, good evening.
Good evening, Seth.
We will resume dictation.
Jane, as Seth, directed an inquiring look at me.
Unless you have any preliminary questions.
No.
There are some points I would like to add here. The time of choosing is somewhat more complicated if the last reincarnational cycle, in your terms, is completed. First of all, you must understand again that now you do not realize your true identity. You identify instead with your present ego, so when you think in terms of life after death, you really mean a future life of the ego that you know. At the end of the reincarnational cycle, you understand quite thoroughly that you, the basic identity, the inner core of your being, is more than the sum of the reincarnational personalities. You might say that the personalities then are but divisions of yourself here. There is no competition between them. There never was any real division, but only a seeming one in which you played various roles, developed different abilities, learned to create in new and diverse ways. These reincarnational personalities continue to develop, but they also understand that their main identity is also yours. When the cycle is finished, therefore, you have complete knowledge of your past lives. The information, experience, and abilities are at your fingertips. This merely means that you understand your multidimensional reality in practical terms. I have used the word multidimensional often, and you see I mean it quite literally, For your reality exists not only in terms of reincarnational existences, but also in the probable realities mentioned earlier. When the time of choosing comes, therefore, the choices available are far more diverse than those offered or possible to personalities who must still reincarnate. There is always the opportunity to teach if you have the inclination and the capabilities, but multidimensional teaching is far different than teaching as you know it now, and it demands rigorous training. Such a teacher must be able to instruct various portions of one entity in your terms at the same time. Say, for example, a particular entity has reincarnations in the 14th century, in 3 BC, in the year AD 260, and in the time of Atlantis. A teacher would simultaneously be in contact with these various personalities, communicating with them in terms that they could understand. Such communication demands a complete knowledge of the root assumptions of such eras and of the general philosophical and scientific climate of thought at the time.
926.
The entity might well be exploring several probable systems too, and these personalities would also have to be reached and contacted. The amount of knowledge and training necessary makes such a teaching communicator career extremely demanding, but it is one of the courses available. The process of learning such information necessarily adds to the development and abilities of the teacher. A delicate manipulation of energy is required and a constant travel through dimensions. Once such a choice is made, training immediately begins, always under the leadership of a practical expert. The vocation, for it is a vocation, leads such a teacher even into other realms of reality than those he previously knew existed. Now, others, finished with reincarnations and of a different overall nature, may begin the long journey leading toward the vocation of a creator. On a much different plane, this can be compared to geniuses in creative fields within your own physical reality. Instead of paints, pigments, words, musical notes, the creators begin to experiment with dimensions of actuality, imparting knowledge in as many forms as possible, and I do not mean physical forms. What you would call time is manipulated as an artist would manipulate pigment. What you would call space is gathered together in different ways. Art is created, then, using time, for example, as a structure. In your terms, time and space might be mixed. The beauties of various ages, the natural beauties, the paintings and buildings are all recreated as learning methods for these beginners. One of their main preoccupations is to create beauty that impinges itself in as many various dimensions of reality as possible. Such a work would be perceived in your system as one thing, for example, but would also be perceived in probable realities, though perhaps in an entirely different way. A multidimensional art, you see, so free and elemental that it would appear simultaneously in many realities. Such an art is impossible to describe in words. The concept has no verbal equivalent. These creators, however, are also involved in inspiring those in all levels of reality available to them. For example, inspiration in your system is often the work of such creators. You may take your break, and we shall continue.
9:44 to 10 o'clock.
Now, these art forms are often symbolic representations of the nature of reality. They will be interpreted in various ways according to the abilities of those who perceive them. In your terms, they may be living dramas. They will always be psychic structures, however, existing apart from any given system of reality, but at least partially perceived by many. Some exist in what you might term the astral plane, and you perceive them in visits during the sleep state.
10:03. Our cat, Willie, suddenly jumped up into Jane's lap, just as he'd done in the last session. Instinctively, I spoke to him rather loudly, afraid he'd shock Jane out of trance. Her eyes flickered at the sound of my voice, but she continued speaking. Willie jumped down.
Others are perceived in glimpses or bits and pieces by your temporal mind while you are half-sleeping and half-waking, or in other periods of dissociation. There are various kinds of multidimensional art, and therefore many levels in which the creators work. The whole Christ story was such a creation.
Pause at 10:06. I sneezed. This wasn't the first time I had sneezed since the session started.
There are also those who choose to be healers, and of course this involves far more than healing as you are familiar with it. These healers must be able to work with all levels of the entity's experience, directly helping those personalities that are a part of it. Again, this involves a manipulation through reincarnational patterns, and here again, great diversification. A healer begins with reincarnational selves with various difficulties.
I sneezed 3 times.
Do you want a break?
I guess not, although I took a moment to think it over.
The healing involved is always psychic and spiritual, and these healers are available to help each personality in your system as you know it, in your present time and in other systems. In a larger context and with greater training, advanced healers deal with the spiritual maladies of vast numbers of personalities. There are those who combine the qualities of teacher, creator, and healer. Others choose lines of development that are particularly suited to their own characteristics. I suggest your break.
10:15. Willie had begun to act up again, so I deposited him in another room and closed the door. Jane said she had been bothered by him and by my sneezing. She had a vague memory of the near shout I directed at Willie. My own energies, she said, were very scattered this evening. She had picked this up. It was certainly true that I wasn't at my best. I continued to sneeze after she resumed at 10:25.
I do not want to discuss the purpose of consciousness's continuous existence or development in this chapter, however. I simply want to make it clear that vast possibilities of progress are possible, and to stress the fact that each personality has full freedom. The developments of consciousness that take place are natural attributes, natural stages. There is no coercion applied. All of the further developments are inherent in the personality that you know, even as the adult is inherent in the child. Now, these descriptions of after-death events may sound very complicated, particularly if you have been used to a simple tale of heaven or eternal rest. Unfortunately, the words fail to describe many of the basics that I would have you understand. You have within yourself, however, the ability to release your intuitions and to receive inner knowledge. As you read this book, the words are meant to release your own intuitional abilities. When you are reading it, your own dreams will give you added information and will be in your mind upon awakening if you are alert for them. There is no such simple end to the life that you know, such as the story of heaven. There is the freedom to understand your own reality, to develop your abilities further, and to feel more deeply the nature of your own existence as a part of all that is.
10:34.
That is the end of the chapter, and the end of our session, unless you have questions.
No, I guess not. I was too tired and uncomfortable.
My heartiest regards to you both, and a fond good evening.
Good evening, Seth.
Now, a small note. A portion of you was earlier projected to the hospital where your father is. Rupert felt the absence of that part of you. You were simply trying to look in on him. In the very back of your mind, you wondered if he knew now that he ever had hay fever. And it was that that triggered the unconscious projection. Your unconscious self is a strong portion of our sessions, and it was for this reason that Rupert sensed this absence. And now, good evening.
Good evening, Seth. Thank you. 10:39 p.m. The session ended comparatively early, for obvious reasons. Seth's information about my unconscious projection was very interesting. An event of that kind could have easily caused my sneezing. There are strong connections involving my father, myself, and hay fever. This is the season for hay fever. Although I'm not bothered much now, in earlier years I suffered with it extensively. I had my first bout when I was 3 years old. At about the same time, my father got rid of his for good. Seth told me some time ago that my father had given me his hay fever, and that for reasons of my own, I had accepted the gift. My symptoms gradually subsided through the balance of the evening. Seth Speaks by Jane Roberts. Copyrighted material. All rights reserved.
Chapter 12. Reincarnational Relationships.
Session 550, September 28, 1970, 9:35 p.m., Monday. From September 7th until 19th, Jane and I were on a radio and television tour of seven cities to publicize Jane's book, The Seth Material. We found the experience stimulating and educational. Seth spoke on television in Boston and was very well received. Two sessions have been held since our return home, to answer questions and handle other matters raised by the tour. Now with this work taken care of, Jane was eager for Seth to resume work on his book. Carol and Sue Watkins witnessed the session. Sue brought a list of questions, which we added to others already on hand.
Good evening.
Good evening, Seth.
And good evening to my traveling friends here. We are going to begin our next chapter to be called Reincarnational Relationships. Now, throughout your reincarnational existences, you expand your consciousness, your ideas, your perceptions, your values. You break away from self-adopted restrictions, and you grow spiritually as you learn to step aside from limiting conceptions and dogmas. Your rate of learning depends entirely upon you, however. Limited, dogmatic, or rigid concepts of good and evil can hold you back. Too narrow ideas of the nature of existence can follow you through several lives if you do not choose to be spiritually and psychically flexible. These rigid ideas can indeed act as leashes, so that you are forced to circle like a tied puppy dog about a very small radius. In such cases, through perhaps a group of existences, you will find yourself battling against ideas of good and evil, running about in a circle of confusion, doubt, and anxiety. Your friends and acquaintances will be concerned with the same problems, for you will draw to yourself those with the same concerns. I am telling you again, therefore, that many of your ideas of good and evil are highly distortive and shadow all understanding you have of the nature of reality. If you form a guilt in your mind, then it is a reality for you, and you must work it out. But many of you form guilts for which there is no adequate cause, and you saddle yourselves with these guilts without reason. In your dimension of activity, there appear to be a wild assortment of evils. Let me tell you that he who hates an evil merely creates another one.
9:45.
Now, from within your point of reference, it is often difficult for you to perceive that all events work toward creativity, or to trust in the spontaneous creativity of your own natures. Within your system, to kill is obviously a moral crime, but to kill another in punishment only compounds the original error. Someone very well known who established a church, if you will, a civilization, once said, "Turn the other cheek if you are attacked." The original meaning of that remark, however, should be understood. You should turn the other cheek because you realize that basically the attacker only attacks himself. Then you are free, and the reaction is a good one. If you turn the other cheek without this understanding, however, and feel resentful, or if you turn the other cheek out of a feeling of pseudo-moral superiority, then the reaction is far from adequate. Now, all of this can be applied to your relationships in your reincarnational existences, and of course, it also is highly pertinent to your current daily experience. If you hate another person, that hate may bind you to him through as many lives as you allow the hate to consume you. You draw to yourself in this existence and in all others those qualities upon which you concentrate your attention. If you vividly concern yourself with the injustices you feel have been done you, then you attract more such experience. And if this goes on, then it will be mirrored in your next existence. It is true that in between lives there is time for understanding and contemplation. Those who do not take advantage of such opportunities in this life often do not do so when it is over. Consciousness will expand. It will create. It will turn itself inside out to do so. There is nothing outside of yourself that will force you to understand these issues or face them. It is useless then to say, when this life is over, I will look back upon my experience and mend my ways. This is like a young man saying, when I grow old and retire, I will use all those abilities that I am not now developing. You are setting the stage for your next life now. The thoughts you think today will in one way or another become the fabric of your next existence. There are no magic words that will make you wise, that will fill you with understanding and compassion, that will expand your consciousness.
958.
Your thoughts and everyday experience contain the answers. Any successes in this life, any abilities, have been worked out through past experience. They are yours by right. You worked to develop them. If you look about you at your relatives, friends, acquaintances, and business associates, you will also see what kind of a person you are, for you are drawn to them as they are drawn to you, through very basic inner similarities. If you examine your thoughts for 5 minutes at various times during the day for several times a month, you will indeed receive a correct impression of the kind of life you have so far arranged for yourself in the next existence. If you are not pleased with what you discover, then you had better begin changing the nature of your thoughts and feelings. As you will see later in this book, you can do so. There is no rule saying that in each life you must meet again those whom you have known before, and yet, through the nature of attraction, that is often the case. You may take your break.
Thank you. I was kidding.
I do not keep you busy all the time, because you are such a good friend.
Thanks a lot. 10:04. Jane's pace had been good, with few pauses. During break, the four of us talked about our activities of last Saturday night. After dancing, we wound up the evening with hot sausage and pepper sandwiches at Toby's Bar and Grill. Resume at 11:15.
Now, I can't compete with a sausage sandwich, but then you do not have a sausage sandwich now. We will continue dictation. You may be born into your present family for many reasons. You may find after death a much stronger relationship emotionally with a personality from a past life. If you are married, for example, and have no true rapport with your mate, you may instead find a past wife or husband waiting for you. Oftentimes, members of various groups, military groups, church groups, hunting groups, will in another life form family relationships in which they will then work out old problems in new ways. Families must be considered as gestalts of psychic activity. They have a subjective identity of which no particular member of the group may be aware. Families have subconscious purposes, though the individual members of the family may pursue these goals without conscious awareness. Such groups are set up ahead of time, so to speak, in between physical existences. Oftentimes, four or five individuals will set themselves a given challenge and assign to the various members different parts to play. Then, in a physical existence, the roles will be worked out. The inner self is always aware of the hidden mechanisms of these family gestalts. Those who have been closely bound through emotional ties often prefer to remain in closely tied or loosely tied physical relationships that continue through many lifetimes. New relationships are always encouraged, however, for you can have ingrown reincarnational families. Many of these form physical organizations that are actually manifestations of inner groupings. I spoke earlier of rigid concepts of right and wrong. There is only one way to avoid this problem. Only true compassion and love will lead to an understanding of the nature of good, and only these qualities will serve to annihilate the erroneous and distortive concepts of evil.
10:28.
The simple fact is that as long as you believe in the concept of evil, it is a reality in your system, and you will always find it manifested. Your belief in it will, therefore, seem highly justified. If you carry this concept through succeeding generations, through reincarnations, then you add to its reality. Let me try to throw some light upon what I am trying to tell you. First of all, love always involves freedom. If a man says he loves you and yet denies you your freedom, then you often hate him. Yet, because of his words, you do not feel justified in the emotion. This sort of emotional tangle itself can lead to continued entanglements through various lives. If you hate evil, then beware of your conception of the word. Hate is restrictive. It narrows down your perception. It is indeed a dark glass that shadows all of your experience. You will find more and more to hate and bring the hated elements into your own experience. Now, if, for example, you hate a parent, then it becomes quite easy to hate any parents, for in their faces you see and project the original offender. In subsequent lives, you may also be drawn into a family and find yourself with the same emotions, for the emotions are the problem and not those elements that seem to bring them about. If you hate illness, you may bring upon yourself a succeeding life of illness because the hate has drawn it to you. If instead you feel...
10:35. Jane, as Seth, broke off. Our cat, Willie, waking up from a snooze, leaped up into her lap. I picked him up, but his claws on Jane's leg brought her out of trance. I put Willie in the closet. Jane sat quietly, then resumed dictation.
Now, if you expand your sense of love, of health, and existence, then you are drawn in this life and in others toward those qualities. Again, because they are those upon which you concentrate. A generation that hates war,
Jane looked at Carl,
will not bring peace. A generation that loves peace will bring peace. To die with hatred for any cause or people or for any reason is a great disadvantage. You have all kinds of opportunities now to recreate your personal experience in more beneficial ways and to change your world. In the next life, you will be working with those attitudes that are now yours. If you insist upon harboring hatreds within you now, you are very likely to continue doing so. On the other hand, those sparks of truth, intuition, love, joy, creativity, and accomplishment gained now will work for you then as they do now. They are, you see, the only true realities. They are the only real foundations of existence. It is foolish, as Rupert once said, to hate a storm or shake your fists at it and call it names. You laugh if you think of children or natives in such activities. It is useless to personify a storm and treat it as a demon, focusing upon its destructive elements or those elements that to you appear destructive. Change of form is not destructive. The explosive energy of a storm is highly creative. Consciousness is not annihilated. A storm is part of creativity. You view it from your own perspective, and yet one individual will feel within the storm the unending cycle of creativity, and another will personify it as the work of the devil. Through all your lives, you will interpret the reality that you see in your own way, and that way will have its effect upon you, and in turn, upon others. The man who literally hates immediately sets himself up in this fashion. He prejudges the nature of reality according to his own limited understanding. Now, I am emphasizing the issue of hate in this chapter on reincarnation because its results can be so disastrous. A man who hates always believes himself justified. He never hates anything that he believes to be good. He thinks he is being just, therefore, in his hatred. But the hatred itself forms a very strong claim that will follow him throughout his lives until he learns that only the hatred itself is the destroyer. Now you may take your break. Begin your chatter, and I will listen.
Okay.
Are you following me in this material?
Sure. Why do you ask? Leaning forward.
You are my first reader.
10:51. Break came, to the laughter of Sue and Carl. Jane's pace had been fast most of the time. Resume at 11:08 in the same manner.
Now, far be it from me to interrupt your edifying conversation. Remember what you concentrate upon, and we will leave it at that. Now we will resume dictation. I would like to make it clear that there is nothing to be gained either by hating hatred. You fall into the same trap. What is needed is a basic trust in the nature of vitality and faith that all elements of experience are used for a greater good. Whether or not you can perceive the way in which evil is transmuted into creativity. What you love will also be a part of your experience in this life and others. The most important idea to be remembered is that no one thrusts the experience of any given lifetime upon you. It is formed faithfully according to your own emotions and beliefs.
As Seth, Jane delivered this material vigorously, her pace rapid.
The great power and energy of love and creativity is apparent in the mere fact of your existence. This is the truth so often forgotten, that the combination of consciousness and existence continues and absorbs those elements that seem to you so destructive.
Pause at 11:13.
Hate is powerful if you believe in it, and yet, though you hate life, you will continue to exist. You have made appointments, each of you, that you have forgotten. They were signed, so to speak, before you were born in this existence. In many cases, the friends that you make were close to you long before you met them in this present life. This does not mean that everyone in your present acquaintanceship has been known to you, and it certainly does not imply a boring record played over and over again, for each encounter is a new one in its own way. Remembering what I said about families, realize also that towns and villages may also be composed of the past inhabitants of other such towns and villages, transposed with new experiences and backgrounds as the group tries different experiments. Now, sometimes there are also such variations in that the inhabitants of a particular town now may be the reborn inhabitants of those who lived, say, in 1632 in a small Irish village. They may be transposed to a town in Idaho. Some who wanted to travel from the old world to the new may be reborn in the new one. You must remember also that abilities from past lives are at your disposal for your present use. You reap your own rewards. Information concerning these is often given to you in the sleep state, and there is a kind of gestalt type of dream, a root dream, by which those who have known each other in past lives now communicate. In such dreams, general mass information is given that the individuals then use as they desire. Overall plans for development are made, as the group members say, of a town decide upon its destiny. Some individuals always choose to be born as a part of some group, reborn, in other words, with past contemporaries, while others, disdaining such endeavors, return in much more isolated positions.
11:25.
This is a matter of psychological feeling. Some individuals are more at ease, more assured, and more capable working with others in this case. You could consider an analogy in which John Doe follows his kindergarten class all the way through high school. In a reincarnational situation, he would always choose to return with associates. Others, however, would rather skip from school to school, appearing alone, relatively speaking, with greater freedom, more challenge, but without the comforting framework of security chosen by the others. In each case, the individual is the judge, not only of each succeeding life, its time, environment, and historical date, but also of its overall character and methods of accomplishment. There are as many different ways to reincarnate, therefore, as there are inner selves, and each inner self will choose its own characteristic methods. I will end our session now that the chapter is begun. I have the feeling that we will have some extra sessions in any case. I wish my friends over here a hearty good evening, and when you both travel next.
Seth has been helping Carl and Sue with astral travel.
I hope you bring your memories along with you. And
to me.
You too.
Okay. Good evening, Seth, and thank you. 11:34. Jane's trance had been deep, her eyes very wide and dark. Seth is still around, she told us. A spirited conversation sprang up now between the four of us. Sue brought up the question of overpopulation. How can this be, she wondered. If a certain number of entities were responsible for the creation of our physical world, where do the extra human beings come from? I told her that, according to Seth, each personality making up an entity could manifest itself physically as often as it chose to. Seth then interrupted us at 11:40.
Now, give me a moment here.
Pause.
First of all, as a species, in the context of normal usage, you have considered yourselves as apart from the rest of nature and consciousness. Your own survival as a species was your main concern. You considered other species only in the light of their use to you. You did not have any true conception of the great sacredness of all consciousness, nor of your relationship within it. You were losing your grasp of that great truth. In the present circumstances, you are carrying that idea forward, of species survival regardless of the consequences, the idea of changing the environment to suit your own purposes, and this has led you to a disregard of spiritual truths. In physical reality, therefore, you are seeing the results. Now, those personalities who are returning are doing so for various reasons. Some of them are drawn to physical life again because of these attitudes. They are those who, in the past, in your terms, strove for physical existence without consideration for the rights of other species. They are driven to return because of their own desires. The species must learn the value of the individual man. The species is also learning its dependence upon other species and beginning to comprehend its part in the whole framework in physical reality. Now, some individuals are being reborn at this time simply to help you understand. They are forcing the issue, and forcing the crisis, for you still have time to change your ways. You are working on two main problems, but both involve the sacredness of the individual and the individual's relationship with others and with all physically oriented consciousness. The problem of war will sooner or later teach you that when you kill another man, basically you will end up killing yourself. The overpopulation problem will teach you that if you do not have a loving concern for the environment in which you dwell, it will no longer sustain you. You will not be worthy of it. You will not be destroying the planet, you see. You will not be destroying the birds or the flowers or the grain or the animals. You will not be worthy of them, and they will be destroying you. You have set up the problem for yourselves within the framework of your reference. You will not understand your part within the framework of nature until you actually see yourselves in danger of tearing it apart. You will not destroy consciousness. You will not annihilate the consciousness of even one leaf. But in your context, if the problem were not solved, these would fade from your experience. The crisis is a kind of therapy, however. It is a teaching method that you have set up for yourselves because you need it. And you need it now, before your species embarks upon journeys to other physical realities. You must learn your lessons now in your own backyard before you travel to other worlds. So you have brought this upon yourself for that purpose, and you will learn.
End session at 11:55 p.m. Session 551, September 30th, 1970, 9:17 p.m., Wednesday.
Now, good evening.
Good evening, Seth.
We will resume dictation. In each life, you are meant to check the exterior environment in order to learn your inner condition. The outer is a reflection of the inner. You are meant to understand the nature of your inner self and to manifest it outward. As this is done, the exterior circumstances should change for the better as the inner self becomes more aware of its own nature and capabilities. Theoretically, then, in each life, you would become stronger, healthier, wealthier, and wiser, but it does not work that way for many reasons. As mentioned earlier, many personalities adopt different kinds of experiences, focusing upon development in certain specific areas and ignoring others, perhaps for a series of lives. No consciousness has the same experiences or interprets them the same, and so each individual utilizes reincarnational opportunities in his own way. Sex changes, for example, are necessary. Some individuals alternate their sex in each succeeding life. Others have a series of female lives and then a series of male lives, or vice versa, but the entire reincarnational framework must involve both sexual experiences. Abilities cannot be developed following a one-sex line. There must be experiences in motherhood and fatherhood. When you get to the point that you realize you are forming your day-to-day existence and the life that you know, then you can begin to alter your own mental and psychic patterns and therefore change your daily environment.
9:25.
This realization, however, should go hand in hand with a deep intuitional knowledge of the capabilities of the inner self. These two factors together can release you from any difficulties that have arisen in past lives. The entire structure of your existence will begin to change with these realizations, and an acceleration of spiritual and psychic growth will develop. There is an inner logic to your current relationships, attitudes, and experiences. If in one life, for example, you hated women, you may very well be a woman in the next life. Only in this way, you see, would you be able to relate to the experience of womanhood, and then, as a woman, face those attitudes that you yourself had against women in the past. If you had no sympathy for the sick, you may then be born with a serious disease, again, now self-chosen, and find yourself encountering those attitudes that once were your own. Such an existence would usually also include other issues, however. No existence is chosen for one reason only, but would also serve many other psychological experiences. A chronically ill existence, for example, might also be a measure of discipline, enabling you to use deeper abilities that you ignored in a life of good health. The perfectly happy life, for example, on the surface may appear splendid, but it may also be basically shallow and do little to develop the personality. The truly happy existence, however, is a deeply satisfying one that would include spontaneous wisdom and spiritual joy. I am not saying, in other words, that suffering necessarily leads to a spiritual fulfillment, nor that all illness is accepted or chosen for such a purpose, for this is not the case.
9:35.
Illness is often the result of ignorance and lazy mental habits. Such a discipline may be adopted, however, by certain personalities who must take strong measures with themselves because of other characteristics. There is an overall pattern to relationships within lives, and yet this does not mean that you travel through various existences with the same limited and familiar number of friends and acquaintances, merely altered like actors with a change of face or costume. Groups of individuals come together in various lives for certain purposes, separate, and may or may not come together again in a different time or place. Again, however, there is no rigid rule. Some families are literally reincarnations of their ancestors, but this is not the general case by any means. Deep relationships will continue in one way or another. Others will simply disappear. The point I want to make is that the opportunity for development and knowledge is as present at this moment in this life as it will ever be. If you ignore day-by-day opportunities for development now, no one can force you to accept and utilize greater abilities after death or between lives. The teachers are there in after-death experience, but there are also teachers here in your existence now. Some families come together in a particular life not because of great attraction or love in a past existence, but for the opposite reason. Families may be composed, then, of individuals who disliked each other in the past and come together in a close relationship where they are to work together toward a common goal, learn to understand each other better, and work out problems in a different kind of context. Jointly, each generation has its own purpose. It is this, to perfect inner knowledge, and to materialize it as faithfully as possible outward into the world. The changing physical scene throughout the centuries, as you know them, represents the inner images that have flickered through the minds of the individuals who lived within the world through the various ages. Now you may take your break.
9:48. Jane's delivery had been fast, but even so, she said, her trance hadn't been as deep as it usually is. She had been bothered by the sounds of people walking back and forth in the hallway outside our apartment. Ordinarily, she wouldn't have noticed anything like this. Resume at 10:05.
Now, it is not necessary that you learn about your own past lives, though it may be helpful if you understand that you chose the circumstances of your birth this time. If you examine your own life now carefully, the challenges that you have set for yourself will become apparent. This is not easy to do, but it is within the grasp of each individual. If you release yourself from hatred, then you automatically release yourself from any such relationships in the future, or any experiences that are based upon hatred. Knowing your reincarnational background, but not knowing the true nature of your present self, is useless. You cannot justify or rationalize present circumstances by saying, "This is because of something I did in a past life." For within yourself now is the ability to change negative influences. You may have brought negative influences into your life for a given reason, but the reason always has to do with understanding, and understanding removes those influences. You cannot say, "The poor are poor simply because they chose poverty, and therefore there is no need for me to help them." This attitude can easily draw poverty to you in the next experience.
10:13. Once again, Jane's trance was broken when our cat Willie jumped up into her lap. Once more, I put him in the closet while Jane gave me an, "Oh well," look. Actually, Willie doesn't interrupt us very often. But now I made a mental note that after this we'd go back to our old routine and put him in another room before session time. Willie used to react strongly to these sessions when they began in 1963. Resume at 10:15.
Each individual is not at the same level of achievement, even at the end of the reincarnational cycle. Some possess certain qualities that do not find a counterpart within human experience. Physical existence itself has a different effect upon various individuals. Some find it an excellent medium of expression and development. They are suited to it. They have the knack for expressing themselves in physical ways and objectifying inner feelings faithfully. Others find this difficult, and yet these same individuals may do much better in other levels of reality. There are hardy souls who thrive in physical reality, and who may have difficulties acclimating to other non-physical areas of activity. In all of these areas, however, deep spiritual or emotional contexts are never negated. Very close friends from past lives who are in a position to do so often communicate with you when you are in the dream state, and the relationships are continued, though you do not realize it consciously. On an unconscious basis, you are aware of the birth into physical life of someone you have known in the past. The strangers that you meet in your dreams are often, of course, people now alive, contemporaries, that you have also known in past lives. There are also passing relationships, contacts made and then dropped. A mate from any given life, for example, may or may not represent someone with whom you have a deep abiding tie, and again, you may marry someone because of highly ambiguous feelings from a past life, and choose a married relationship that is not based upon love, though love may emerge. Twins, incidentally, almost always involve very deep, abiding psychic relationships of a strong, sometimes obsessive nature. I'm speaking now of identical twins. I suggest your break.
10:29. This evidently wasn't our night. Again, Jane said upon coming out of trance, she had been aware of the footsteps of people passing back and forth in the hall outside our living room door. I had been hoping her trance was deeper this time. Resume at 10:37.
Reincarnational goals also vary greatly. I want to stress that reincarnation is a tool used by personalities. They each use it in their own way. Some enjoy female existences, or have greater fondness for male lives. While both must be encountered, there is a great range of choice and activity. Some personalities will have difficulties along certain lines, and develop with relative ease in other ways. Predetermination is never involved, for the challenge and circumstances are chosen. Some problems may be put off, for example, for several existences. Some personalities want to solve their strongest problems and get them over with, perhaps in a series of rather trying existences and exaggerated circumstances. Others of a more placid nature will take their problems one at a time. Rest periods may also be taken, and they are highly therapeutic. For example, an excellent, satisfying life with a minimum of problems may be chosen either as a prelude to a life of concentrated challenge or as a self-adopted reward for a previous difficult life. Those that thoroughly enjoy the physical medium without being obsessed by it, however, do very well indeed. The laws of reincarnation are adapted by the individual personalities to suit themselves. I suggest that we end our session, unless you have questions.
No.
My heartiest regards.
Good night, Seth. 10:47 p.m. At last, Jane's trance had improved. I was just beginning to feel that I was getting into a deeper state, she said. At least I wasn't aware of anything, but now it's all over. Seth Speaks by Jane Roberts. Copyrighted material. All rights reserved.
Chapter 13. Reincarnation, Dreams, and the Hidden Male and Female Within the Self.
Session 555, October 21st, 1970. 9:30 p.m., Wednesday. Since September 30th, Seth has held two ESP class sessions. Held a session for our friend John Barkley, who is moving to Nevada. Held two sessions concerning the work Jane and I are embarking upon because of this material. And spoken through Jane upon television once more. This time during our return visit to a Washington, D.C. station. Early this month, Jane and I bought an anthology containing a long section by Carl Jung, the Swiss psychoanalyst who died in 1961. Jane hadn't finished reading this part of the book when Seth suggested, in the 554th session for October 19th, that she lay the book aside. Let Jung go for now. He did not elaborate. This wasn't Jane's first contact with the writings of Jung by any means. It's interesting to note, however, the way in which Seth takes off from material like Jung's, developing it to include his own ideas and interpretations, as he does in this chapter. It had been raining all day. Jane had been to the chiropractor today and was very relaxed. So relaxed that I asked her if she felt like having a session. She wanted to, she said. Her eyes were half open, her voice very quiet, almost conversational, as the session began.
Good evening.
Good evening, Seth.
Now, we will begin dictation.
I thought I would get Seth's reaction to Jane's physical state. How do you feel?
I feel fine. One point to our friend. It is better if he does not go to the chiropractor when it is raining.
Why is that?
Partially because of the muscular reaction mentioned by the chiropractor, and partially because the body's healing mechanisms operate more effectively in clear weather. He will snap back more quickly after a treatment. There is one good benefit, however. He rested the full amount specified.
1 hour.
This time, because he felt it necessary.
Would you rather pass up the session tonight?
We are fine for a session. It will be a short one, considering, but a good one. I would like to elaborate, however, on these statements. Such a chiropractic treatment causes, of course, a manipulation of the atomic structure that composes the vertebrae. The electrical reactions are different according to the weather and atmospheric conditions. In rainy weather, there is an added electrical resistance within the atomic structures themselves, a sort of delayed reaction, hardly perceptible in physical terms, a delayed period before the vertebrae come to rest again, so to speak, in the desired position. While they take the desired position, there is still continued activity. In clear weather, there is much less of a delayed reaction, and the activated, stirred-up atoms come more quickly to rest. Now, our next chapter will be called Reincarnation, Dreams, and the Hidden Male and Female Within the Self.
By now, Jane's pace had quickened a good deal.
As I mentioned earlier, each person lives both male and female lives. As a rule, conscious memory of these is not retained. To prevent an over-identification of the individual with his present sex, within the male there resides an inner personification of femaleness. This personification of femaleness in the male is the true meaning of what Jung called the anima. The anima in the male is, therefore, the psychic memory and identification of all the previous female existences in which the inner self has been involved. It contains within it the knowledge of the present male's past female histories and the intuitive understanding of all the female qualities with which the personality is innately endowed. The anima, therefore, is an important safeguard, preventing the male from over-identifying with whatever cultural male characteristics have been imposed upon him through present background, environment, and education. The anima serves not only as a personal, but as a mass civilizing influence, mellowing strongly aggressive tendencies, and serving also as a bridge both in communicating with women in a family relationship, and in communication also as it is applied through the arts and verbalization. The male will often dream of himself, therefore, as a female. The particular way in which he does so can tell him much about his own reincarnational background in which he operated as a female. Maleness and femaleness are obviously not opposites, but merging tendencies. The priestess, the mother, the young witch, the wife, and the old wise woman. These general types are archetypes, simply because they are root elements representing symbolically the various kinds of so-called female qualities and the various kinds of female lives that have been lived by males. They have also been lived by females, of course. However, the women do not need to be reminded of their femaleness, but again, so that they do not over-identify with their present sex, there is what Jung called the animus, or the hidden male within the woman. Again, however, this represents the male lives with which the self has been involved, the young boy, the priest, the aggressive jungle man, and the wise old man. These are types, representing generally and symbolically past male lives lived by present women. Women, therefore, can learn much about their reincarnational past as men through studying those dreams in which these types appear or in which they themselves appear as men. Through the anima and the animus, so-called present personalities are able to draw upon the knowledge and intuitions and background that was derived from past existences as the opposite sex. On such occasions, for example, the woman may go overboard and exaggerate female characteristics, in which case the animus or male within comes to her aid, bringing through dream experiences an onrush of knowledge that will result in compensating male-like reactions. The same applies to a male when he over-identifies with what he believes to be male characteristics for whatever reason. The anima, or woman within, will rouse him to make compensating actions, causing an upsurge of intuitive abilities, bringing a creative element to offset aggressiveness. Ideally left alone, these operations would result in a balance individually and en masse, where aggressiveness was always used creatively, as indeed it can and should be. You may take your break.
10:02. Very good, I said to Jane as she came out of trance. Yes, she said. I could tell it was great, 'cause he's got a lot more to say. Yet she looked so limp and heavy-eyed, so bleary and yet relaxed, that I wondered if she could stay awake to continue. Resume in the same manner at 10:21.
Now, the animus and the anima are, of course, highly charged psychically. But the origin of this psychic charge and the inner fascination are the result of a quite legitimate inner identification with these personified other sex characteristics.
Pace slower.
They not only have a reality in the psyche, however, but they are embedded in genetically codified data by the inner self, a genetic memory of past psychic events transposed into the genetic memory of the very cells that compose the body. Each inner self, adopting a new body, imposes upon it and upon its entire genetic makeup memory of the past physical forms in which it has been involved. Now, the present characteristics usually overshadow the past ones. They are dominant, but the other characteristics are latent and present, built into the pattern. The physical